Welcome to Zero Knowledge. I'm your host, Anna Rose. In this podcast, we will be exploring the latest in zero knowledge research and the decentralized web, as well as new paradigms that promise to change the way we interact and transact online. In this multi-interview episode, I dive into the wild world of Kusama. With my three guests, Will Pankowitz, Raul Ramanuti, and Bruno Schwartz, we explore the connection and difference between Kusama and Polkadot. We define some of the key components of the ecosystem, do a check-in on how Kusama governance and on-chain decision-making has evolved since its launch, and we learn about the secret society, Kusama's creative chaos culture, and more. I also chat with Bruno about his novel Kusama-based NFT project, Remark. But before we start in, I want to let you know about ZK Hack, a multi-round online event with workshops and puzzle-solving competitions. This is put together by the podcast and the ZK Validator, and is supported by a number of fantastic sponsors. It kicked off last week, but it runs on a weekly cadence. Every Tuesday, we're doing a workshop and a new puzzle is released, and this is going on for 7 weeks, so there's still plenty of time for you to join in if you haven't already. So I hope to see you there. I've added the link in the show notes. I also want to point you to the ZK Jobs board. There, you can find hiring ZK and blockchain-focused teams. So if you're looking for a new opportunity to work in the space, be sure to pop over and check it out. I would also like to thank this week's sponsor, Centrifuge, a real-world DeFi project. Centrifuge puts real-world assets on the blockchain, allowing issuers to get liquidity on their assets and investors to make a safe, stable yield in the volatile crypto world. It's built on Substrate, which you're actually going to hear a little bit about in this episode, and it also bridges the Ethereum and Polkadot worlds. Centrifuge are currently hiring for a number of positions, such as protocol engineer, product manager, full stack engineer, and more. Check out the link in the show notes to find out more about these jobs. So thank you again, Centrifuge. Now here is my episode all about Kusama. In today's episode, I'm exploring the world of Kusama. And to do this, I'm going to be inviting three guests on the show for three separate interviews. My first guest is Will Pankowitz from Parity. Welcome to the show, Will.
Thank you.
Will, you've been at Parity for...
Like two years.
Yep. Tell me a little bit about what you do at Parity.
So I have a funny title called Master of Validators. So I haven't seen this elsewhere, and this is also kind of a thing that's, it's funnily enough, actually like on my passport nowadays. It's like for my German visa and stuff like that, it's actually listed as like Master of Validators in there, which every time I go through like customs and borders, it's people look at me kind of funny. But essentially what this means is I kind of coordinate a lot of people in the ecosystem, people that run infrastructure, mainly validators, but also just anyone that runs nodes. So this includes people like exchanges, block explorers, wallets, anything like that sort of. But it's a little bit more kind of general as well. I'm pretty interested in just kind of participate in just the ecosystem of people doing things in like governance and people just integrating things in general, just like participating. And so, yeah.
Cool. Are you doing this on Kusama and Polkadot or just on Kusama?
Both networks. Generally, kind of the process of actually like doing things like releases, actually putting out binaries, putting out things that people run. The process is actually pretty similar. And so in this sense, kind of the communities for both that run things are a bit different, but the process of doing things is quite similar. And so generally, I will kind of coordinate both kind of groups of people, I would say.
And when you talk about the validators, you're primarily talking about like the central network. In one case, it would be like the relay chain of Kusama or the relay chain of Dot. Because there's like parachains now on Kusama as well. And you're not necessarily working on that side, or are you? Like, where does the validator set end for you?
Yeah, and that's I guess why I kind of say I do just things in the ecosystem and kind of people that just run infrastructure in general. The line between like, okay, where is Kusama and where is kind of like Polkadot and where is also the ecosystem is actually kind of a little bit blurry there. Generally, it's kind of like people that will run things, all these different teams, all these different parachains, all these different projects will also have to run infrastructure and whatnot as well. Mm. And a lot of the things that they're kind of building upon and based upon is also kind of built on Substrate, the same thing that we're using to build out Polkadot and Kusama. And so there's also a bit of kind of coordination effort between a lot of the people that are running things like collators for parachains and just nodes in general across the ecosystem.
Let's define, I mean, I've done a couple episodes on Polkadot and a couple episodes. I've done at least one episode on Kusama. But let's define for folks like what these words mean. Substrate. What is Substrate?
Yeah, so Substrate is kind of this blockchain building development framework. There's been like a lot of lessons that have been learned from kind of Parity building out like blockchain clients from like Ethereum, but also Parity's been kind of working on things like a Zcash client, a Bitcoin client, et cetera, et cetera. So at some point while we were kind of building Polkadot, we realized there's kind of a lot of similarities in just the way that you actually build things out. And so we decided to kind of encapsulate a lot of these things as kind of primitives in this modular kind of framework called Substrate. And so Polkadot and Kusama are built with Substrate, but also all these kind of teams in the ecosystem are also building out Substrate. Substrate is this like blockchain building framework that allows you to be able to just build your kind of like application specific blockchain with a lot of kind of flexibility and modularity.
Cool. What is the relationship between Polkadot and Kusama?
So Kusama is, as we call kind of this like canary network, it's this very much kind of this experimental kind of thing that we will deploy things first, that we kind of will push the limits. Generally, kind of this idea of like a canary network is actually not really new. The idea of kind of canary deployments are actually like a kind of like well-defined like software thing. If there's any kind of like big traditional companies like Facebook or Google or like anything like that that make kind of like massive applications and whatnot. Generally, kind of like canary deployments is this idea of you want to kind of like have new features. These may not be like feature complete. These may kind of be like experimental, things like that. And you want to kind of like roll this out to users. You want to actually roll this out to production. And so generally, it's kind of like you might kind of like segment out the amount of people that actually will be able to experience this. And so, for example, if you're going to like Facebook.com or something like that, you would segment out. It's like, okay, maybe it's like 1/100th of the people that actually visit the site will kind of like
experience this thing.
Yeah. And so generally it's this process of actually kind of just like, how do you deploy new things, new features, new, really like anything. And so Kusama is very much this place that you'll kind of deploy new things. You'll maybe have things that are more experimental. You would actually kind of test the limits of kind of like what this thing actually kind of is. And generally, kind of compared to Polkadot is very much more so kind of this place where things might be a little bit more stable, things might be a little bit more kind of like predictable, things are more kind of like conservative. Kusama is more of kind of this place where we kind of like push things to the limit. We'll try things that we may or may not sure actually kind of like work. Kind of in general, the purpose is actually to break Kusama to make sure that Polkadot is actually a place that people will have stable and conservative and really good applications and whatnot.
So we also use the term relay chain, and maybe we should define that in the Kusama Polkadot world.
So this idea of the relay chain is mostly to be able to have things kind of like interoperability, to be able to have a lot of these different chains actually being able to kind of like talk to each other, to be able to share different kinds of like messages and whatnot.
And security.
And security. And so basically the way that you can have things kind of like interoperability via a lot of like these messages and whatnot is all these different parachains will share this kind of like same security via the validators in the validator set for either Polkadot or Kusama. So this is kind of like where finality is derived in the sense of, okay, once a block gets in kind of Polkadot or Kusama from all these kind of parachains, it cannot be reverted. And so all these different parachains will have consensus related to actually doing like block production. The thing of like finality and whatnot is kind of like once it goes onto Polkadot or Kusama, that's where this idea of like shared security and the idea of kind of like a relay chain is kind of like where that comes from. I actually really kind of like this blog post by Mustafa from Celestia. He kind of put out pretty recently where they're talking about kind of like this idea of like clusters. And so you can imagine in the idea of kind of this cross-chain interoperable world, there's kind of like different trust assumptions and different kind of like security assumptions for a lot of these different kind of like chains and these different environments. And so you can kind of like group these somewhat by like clusters sort of. And so you could have like inter-cluster communication and also like intra-cluster communication. And like these clusters will kind of like share similar kinds of like environments for things. And so I can imagine maybe like Ethereum and all these like layer twos will share kind of like the same kind of environment of sorts, being Ethereum miners and just kind of proof of work and stuff there. But something like Polkadot, for example, shares also kind of this same similar environment of everything's by kind of like these relay chain validators. And so like this would be like a cluster in and of itself. You could have inter-cluster communication and then intra-cluster communication where it's like, okay, maybe something from a Bitcoin bridge from Polkadot to Bitcoin, it's like that's kind of like just one cluster communicating to another cluster and things like that. And so I find that actually like a good way of actually framing this in like a paradigm to think about these things by.
Would you then think of Kusama as a cluster and then Polkadot's a different cluster?
Yeah. So
okay.
And so in that sense, like all the things on Kusama are kind of like their own thing, sort of. And so it's very much the same way that like Kusama is to Polkadot what Ethereum is to kind of Polkadot, where it's very much still kind of like separate. There's still kind of like a bit of separate boundaries there. There will be kind of bridges and there will be ways to actually like communicate and share things and send things across and whatnot.
But, and it might be easier to build because the logic is the same.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Like there's different trust assumptions, there's different kind of paradigms of how you would actually transact and stuff like that. But Kusama itself and Polkadot in and of itself are different just because they're two different clusters. And so the way that they actually kind of like communicate with each other in within itself and outside of itself are a little bit kind of separate.
The funny thing about doing this episode on Kusama currently, like today, is that as we speak, Polkadot parachains are coming online. And so the attention has been on Kusama up like for the last, I guess, 6 months because parachains were live and people could actually participate in crowd loans and start to see the true vision for this like central relay chain and the parachains connected, but only on Kusama. But come, I guess, a month or two, we're going to see it on Polkadot. What do you think happens to Kusama if that sort of attention and direction now goes towards Polkadot? What happens to the projects on Kusama? Is it enough of a network of its own that it would actually survive this? Or is it kind of like going to fall more into the realm of like a testnet, incentivized testnet, what it maybe initially was?
Yeah, so I mean, like, we don't really use this term subjective. Testnet. Like, testnet is kind of a dirty word, I suppose. But a lot of what I think the difference will be is there's at least kind of Rob Habmeyer recently kind of mentioned this in some talks and like a blog post. But the idea of kind of like technical readiness versus kind of like maturity. In the sense of like, okay, right now, kind of for a lot of parachains, things are kind of like technically ready for this. This
means on Polkadot.
Yes. Okay. Well, like both Polkadot and Kusama. This is the idea that, okay, things are kind of like feature complete. The code works, all of that kind of stuff. But this isn't actually kind of like as mature as it probably could be in the sense of like, okay, optimizations, actually having things being like kind of very like bulletproof and kind of sturdy and just kind of like very robust kind of code base and infrastructure for a lot of these things. And I think Kusama is very much this place where these things will mature a lot quicker than they will on Polkadot, both kind of like from the perspective of Kusama itself, like the actual kind of like relay chain, but also a lot of these parachain projects, just because they can kind of like test things, they can iterate things on kind of like their features and their kind of code a lot faster. And eventually kind of like it will be mature on Kusama and then eventually it will kind of be mature on Polkadot there. And so in this sense, people, I think, will experiment a lot more on Kusama and actually like try things and test things out and test the boundaries of all of this. And for that reason, like a lot of kind of what we'll see on Kusama, I think, will differ just in the sense of like, if you think about like assets, for example, there might be like a little bit more exotic assets. There might be a little bit more kind of like interesting use cases, things that may or may not actually like make it over to Polkadot. Like maybe things are kind of an application that may be kind of like experimental or something like that.
And it will fail.
Yeah.
it fails on Kusama, I guess.
Well, like even if it doesn't necessarily, not necessarily fail, but it just doesn't necessarily like succeed. And so in that case, like it can exist on Kusama and not like succeed, but still exist and kind of just be this like existential thing. But it just doesn't make its way onto Polkadot or something like that. And so just the amount of things that exist on Kusama, I think will be a lot more than Polkadot, but also there's just going to be a lot more like interesting, wacky experiments, I think.
And also, I mean, maybe a note for the listeners, when you think of a parachain project, a lot of them kind of that are live today actually have two versions of themselves. So they have their usual, like their brand, their name that they've been working under for the last, I don't know, couple years, which is very much associated with Polkadot. But then they've created these, their own sort of test canary, not testnet. Sorry to all the Kusama fans listening. I feel like I've offended some people. Sorry. But yeah, they have their own incentivized canary networks. So like the parachains basically have two versions of themselves, two iterations. And those canary versions are the ones that are using crowd loans to do the parachain auctions to get a slot on Kusama. So what you're saying is like, because I think that's maybe important for people to envision, like it's not necessarily the relay chains of Polkadot and Kusama doing the crazy experiments. Maybe they are, but it's also these parachain canary versions. I guess the most, like in the Polkadot episode, I actually interviewed Akala and Moonbeam and Centrifuge, all of those networks actually have recently, I think, all gotten parachain slots on Kusama. And so, yeah, I guess what you're saying here is like the experimentation that they would need to do could happen there as well. It's like it's created an environment not just for Kusama developers and the Parity team to experiment, but also these parachain teams.
Yeah, and I know a lot of these teams will actually have like very almost different strategies for how they'll like launch their kind of Kusama chain and also kind of like what their Polkadot chain will look like. I think, for example, like Centrifuge, their chain for Kusama is called Altair, and their chain for Polkadot is called Centrifuge. But there are use cases for things. I think they're targeting kind of like different kind of markets and different users. For Polkadot, very much the idea is that like you want to have real world assets and like liquidity for a lot of these real world assets. For Kusama, or at least for their like Altair chain, I know a lot of kind of like what they're interested in is kind of just like wackier assets to be able to have like liquidity for. So things kind of like NFTs, things like art, things that you might kind of just not necessarily think about, maybe things to experiment with. And so like just because of like a lot of the partners that they work with and stuff like that is a little bit more more traditional kind of companies in on the Polkadot chain. Some of the companies in kind of entities they might work with on Kusama might be a little bit more like out there, more interesting use cases for things. And so I think a lot of these teams will kind of have just different use cases for different chains. Maybe they want to like try things out and just like see, okay, maybe does this market segment work that we want to target and work with? And they don't know that they don't necessarily want to test that on Polkadot necessarily. And so Kusama is very much a place to kind of be able to validate kind of like business ideas and be able to kind of like test and see if things actually kind of work and be able to kind of like fail quickly and then iterate and then kind of like actually make really cool and awesome innovative products and experiences.
But I mean, I think a sort of a follow-up question or a thought I have here is, and I know you can't predict the future, but like, will there be teams where their main sort of Polkadot project just doesn't work that well, and then they are only a Kusama parachain? Like, do you expect projects to only launch on Kusama as well? Like, I guess I'm trying to understand, like, can you really think about this as a truly unique ecosystem where it's so significantly different and has its own players, or is it always going to be connected to Polkadot?
Yeah, I think there's actually a handful of teams that have been interested in kind of the sentiment of only launching on Kusama. I guess one in particular that kind of comes to mind is Zeitgeist, which they're kind of interested in this kind of like futarchy ideas of prediction markets and whatnot. And so far, I think their plans are solely to launch on Kusama. I think in general, like just the communities for both are a bit different. The amount of people that will own either Kusama or Polkadot and just kind of like participating in things is also fairly separate. Both from the perspective of like people participating in crowd loans, people that are staking, people that are running validators and whatnot, both actually have divergent communities as of now. And so I think in the future, a lot of kind of the differences will be the way that these communities actually kind of like participate in things, the way that they kind of like organize themselves, the ways that they kind of actually come together to actually be a part of what this ecosystem actually is. I think kind of like one example of this is the society on Kusama, which is this very interesting thing where people get tattoos to join this. You could think of this as kind of like a DAO of sorts. And I think this might have also been covered in a previous podcast or something like that.
We did an episode on Kusama, but so long ago. I don't know if it already existed. This was before it launched.
Yeah.
So do describe what the society, is it a secret society?
It could be, I don't know.
Or is it an on-chain, very public society where everyone knows who's in it?
Yeah, I mean, people at least know who's in it based on their addresses and whatnot.
But and the tattoos that they've gotten with Kusama logos and stuff?
Yeah, yeah. It's like the idea is kind of this thing of almost like a human blockchain. And so people, in order to join this society, this DAO or whatnot, you have to get a tattoo of something resembling the Kusama network. So it could be like the Canary logo. It can be like the Genesis hash. It could be kind of like anything very abstractly kind of like related to it, so long as it kind of also contains the head of kind of the previous person that also kind of joined.
Oh.
And so you could like think of this almost as like a human blockchain sort of.
It has to reference the previous tattoo or the previous...
The previous person.
How would you do that with a... The tattoo has to?
Tattoo has to have like an identifier of the previous person. So this is oftentimes people will use these indices, which is kind of like a very shortened version of kind of like the public address of that.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
It's like five numbers or letters or something.
Yeah, yeah. And so, like, in order to join this, you need to have kind of what's called like proof of ink. You need to kind of like submit a bid for it, and people actually will be able to kind of like get money from this like pot of funds for getting a tattoo.
Wow!
And so it's actually really interesting, just because the way that a lot of the economics of kind of the way that like funds work and stuff like that, part of block rewards will go to the Kusama Treasury. And the Kusama Treasury, the idea is just spending funds for kind of like ecosystem good projects, public infrastructure, that kind of thing. But there's this kind of like spending pressure where if a certain amount of funds aren't spent by some period of time, generally they would get burned. And this is the case for Polkadot. They would get burned, but on Kusama, instead of being burned, they get distributed to this pot that's funding this society of
sorts.
And so people that get tattoos will get money from kind of this pot of funds. And so right now, at least, kind of the sole use of this kind of society treasury thing is kind of just solely incentivizing getting new members and whatnot. But right now it's kind of at its limit, sort of. So right now there's, I believe, like 150 people that are already kind of like in the society.
Who got tattoos.
Yes.
They all were also not tiny tattoos,
no,
right? Like there's a minimum size.
Yeah. it's like a pretty like evident thing.
I know at least three people who got these tattoos. And a lot of them got them really early.
Yeah,
and I feel like,
what was
the amount you'd get early on?
I think like the most someone got was like 1,000 KSM, which like as of today's prices is like hundreds of thousands of dollars, which is honestly quite ridiculous. At the time, it was like not as much, probably like, I don't know, tens of thousands of like of
not even
of
wasn't
less.
It like
a lot of people got like way less, at least at those days prices. If they held on to things, it might have appreciated nicely. But it's kind of like just incentivizing people to do like interesting and wacky things, I think, is kind of just the idea there. And right now, at least, kind of the society is a bit constrained just because of the fact that it's literally on the Kusama relay chain itself. And so there's not as much kind of flexibility in actually kind of like doing things. Kusama in Polkadot, in at least kind of like in Substrate, there's a lot of primitives for actually doing really cool governance things, of like having the ways of you actually organizing things and coordinate, say, spending funds, doing like treasury proposals and things like that. There's actually a lot of like really interesting primitives there. And so in the near future, I would expect this society thing to actually probably become its own like parachain. And you can imagine maybe like a lot of the people there are pretty, I guess, like artsy. The fact that they kind of tattoos might be a little bit telling of, like, I guess some of the kinds of people that there are. But you can imagine maybe it's kind of like a lot of these people that will come together that are in the society can come together to kind of like create decisions of like what to do with this pot of funds, for example. And so you can imagine like this thing that is self-sufficient and actually like funding art and actually like funding kind of like making like NFTs or something like that. Really, like, there's a lot of just really cool structures there for kind of just making cool things that are not necessarily for the purpose of like getting money back in return or something like that. It's very much, I think, kind of this thing of like making art for the sake of art, I think, which at least kind of like funding art for the sake of making cool art, which can be really cool, I think.
Nice. So what else do you see coming down the line for Kusama?
The only thing I think that's kind of like interesting to think about is, right now, at least, when people submit crowd loans, they kind of like give up their rights for like voting and staking and stuff like that. And they kind of give their rights up to these parachains. And so in the near future, this might be this thing where it's like parachains will be able to vote on stuff in and of themselves. So it's like the funds that are locked into the auction for that will be able to participate in governance on the relay chain.
Oh, really? I always thought it was like just locked and locked. Can they stake those? Can they vote with those?
As of now, no, but these are things being discussed. And I think it's like in the works for actually being that, have an implementation of sorts.
But this would probably happen on Kusama first, and it would probably be tested out a little bit there.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fascinating. Thanks so much for the interview, Will.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
And for coming on the show.
Yeah.
So next up, I'm here with Raul, a council member and community manager of Kusama. Welcome to the show, Raul.
Hi, Anna. Nice to see you.
Raul, tell us a little bit about your involvement in the Kusama network, how it started, what you're doing now.
Yeah, so I sort of work as a community manager for the governance bodies of Kusama network. So I'm a council member at Kusama, and my job or role is to provide all of the information that councilors need to review, discuss, and vote on motions, and also provide this information as well for community members in democracy module, which is one of the collectives. in democracy in order for them to also discuss and vote on referenda. So basically, I make sure that everyone has the information they need in order to make an informed decision when it comes to motions, referendums, or treasury proposals.
Cool. Actually, so in our last interview, in the last interview I just did with Will, we talked very much about like the structure of the Polkadot and Kusama ecosystem, a relay chain, parachains, and we did kind of near the end of that touch on community and governance. I think with this interview, I want to focus a little bit more on that. I know you're kind of the perfect person to do that with. So how would you describe Kusama governance? It's now been how long, like a year and a half or 2 years that the network is live?
I think almost 2 years, yes.
Okay. So maybe tell us a little bit about like where it started and how it's developed to now, it's changed.
The governance design on both Polkadot and Kusama are very similar. The difference is that on Kusama, everything is faster. Everything is four times faster. So this means that decision-making is as well faster, and you can experiment and change the parameters in the network in a very speedy way. Right. This involves decision making and voting by not only council members, but also by the community. In Kusama, the governance system is divided into three collectives, right? One is the democracy module, the other one is the council, and the third one is the technical committee. The democracy module is the most important one, and it includes all of the Kusama holders. So anyone who holds Kusama tokens is part of this democracy module and is able to either propose referenda or vote on referendums. The council, it's also a very important body because it kind of like initiates proposals and initiates legislation for the democracy module to vote after. In general, the council cannot really change parameters in the network without the approval of the democracy module, without the approval of the community. So this is why when we vote, for example, on runtime upgrades, we see that the council initiates the voting and then this passes to the community to be voted and accepted, right? With the help of the technical committee. And the technical committee is the third body. And this collective doesn't really have the right to propose legislation, but they work very much in coordination with the council in order to fast track proposals that need to be fast tracked for emergency reasons, for example. Hmm. So if the council would pass a motion to be voted by democracy module, let's say, the vote would be up for 7 days, and then you would have 7 days enactment. But if the technical committee intervenes, this can be faster. So you can vote on referenda for, let's say, 3 hours and then have a delay to only 1 hour if it's an emergency and we found, for example, a bug on the code that needs to be fixed. Because we need to remember that Kusama Network is a canary network, right, as we call it. So it's very experimental and it allows us to stress the chain in order for any changes that work to be after deployed on Polkadot after audits. So it's very important to stress the network in that sense.
Cool. You just described these three bodies. Let's kind of go through them again. There's sort of the general democracy module, which is everybody.
Correct.
There's the technical council, and then there's the council?
There's a technical committee, and then it's the council.
The council. Correct. Okay.
Yeah.
So the general, you sort of did say though, can the general public also submit proposals or are the
yes.
proposals mostly, okay. So both the council and the general can submit proposals.
Correct. So there are two funnels, so to say, to submit proposals. One would be the council, only council members can propose motions to the council.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one will be token holders via democracy module. They can propose public proposals, submit public proposals that are seconded by others, and then they go up for vote as referenda.
Do they need a council member to weigh in for it to go through, or could it be any? Okay.
You only need others to second your proposal, and then the most seconded proposal will pass first to be voted in referenda queue.
Very cool. I should mention the Zero Knowledge Validator is actually a member of the council, as you are as well. Tell me a little bit about voting on and off the council members. How does that actually work? Like, is it the general public or other council members who get to decide who's on the council?
So the council is voted by the general public. The council is voted by the community. On Kusama, the council or the set of counselors can change every 24 hours. Mm-hmm. So it's very important that the community votes on their preferred council members or on their favorite council members or the council members that most align with their interests to enter the council and be able to represent them. We have to remember that the council represents passive stakeholders, right? And so all of the community votes on their preferred council members. And then the election fragments ballot, which is the same ballot that elects the active set of validators, chooses the active set of council members from all of the possible sets for the best set only. And this changes or is recalculated, so to say, every 24 hours. So if the community changes its vote every 24 hours, the council would be changing every 24 hours.
Would you say, is there a lot of turnover on the council at the moment, or would you say it's pretty stable after 2 years?
I would say after 2 years, it's pretty stable. The changes we see the most are the last two or three seats. Those are the ones we normally see changing. Not every 24 hours, but I would say every week or every 2 weeks, we have a new council member. Mm-hmm. And we had to make them aware, okay, so your candidacy has been accepted and now you're a council member. And then I talk to them, I have a call with them, I explain more or less how the process works. I tell them to please join the Kusama Direction channel, which is the public channel where everything is discussed when it comes to the direction of the Kusama network. I would say right now it's pretty stable, and only the last two or last three seats in general change.
Do you see this expanding though? Because I know it's been expanded once, right? You've already added a couple more seats.
Twice.
Yeah. Damn. So is the plan to eventually, like the validator set that was expanded from, did it start at 198 or something and expands now to 600? So like that expanded quite rapidly and it's quite big. Do you see the council also expanding, or have you kind of settled on like this number for now?
Mm-hmm. I would hope so. I mean, I think a bigger council would be much more representative of what the Kusama community is. We've been, I think at the beginning, it was 13 council members, then it was 17.
Okay.
And now it's 19 council members.
Yeah, I think we joined when it became 17. That makes sense.
Yeah. I would hope that the council goes up to like something like 23 members or something similar. I think it would be much more representative of passive stakeholders in the Kusama ecosystem, the same way as the active set of validator has increased, right?
Mm.
That said, it's important to emphasize that governance on Kusama as it stands right now, it's likely to be, I wouldn't say problematic, but to raise a lot of questions and issues if the regulations that are being discussed at the moment pass as laws.
Like which ones? What do you mean?
Like the Financial Action Task Force policy. And so we need to, and we will, try and experiment with new forms and improve the governance to be a bit more fluid, more decentralized, more accessible and more inclusive. And then put this up for vote and discussion by the community so the community can be aware and they can give their input to new ways of governance.
Interesting. I didn't actually think about how like real world regulation intersects, but I guess, I mean, I feel like it's always been on the radar. Like in the future, we're going to have to think about that, but it's crazy that you're actually thinking about it now.
Yeah. And I mean, I think this was widely discussed at Sub-Zero, which happened last week at Sub-Zero conference. And it's not something that will happen 1 week to the other, right? Like the regulations will not happen like that, but we have to be prepared and we have to face them. And it's important that they happen. So we need to see how we can comply or adapt to them as well.
Kusama's parachains have also been live since, I'm going to say like this spring?
Yeah.
So has this changed the way governance works actually on Kusama? Like, does it in any way affect, I mean, in a way, some of the supply has now been locked in crowd loans. I don't know if that affects voting power or what have you, but it's like, I am very, very curious to hear if that has changed the thinking around governance.
In general, I could say that right now, teams that are connected as parachains, so projects that are connected as parachains on Kusama, are much more active when they participate into in the direction channel or in the decisions that the council or the community is taking. They propose new stuff. They propose new things. For example, the reduction of some transaction fees for XEM protocol is about to be proposed right now, because a lot of parachains think, or projects think, that it's very prohibitive for them. Mm. So we're gonna be discussing it next. In general, parachain teams are much more active when it comes to governance, because it's now changes that affect them as well directly.
Totally.
And governance can also help them fix issues that they might have, since they are connected to the relay chain as well. Mm. Right now, I think we have 12 parachains on Kusama. And this week, we just voted the next batch of auctions, which will happen once a week for 8 period leases. And the onboarding of the winners of these slots will happen off by one. So at the next lease, mm-hmm. the winners of the current will be onboarded, and so on and so on.
Cool, cool. I think a big question, I mentioned this in the last interview too, it's like, I'm doing this interview at kind of a funny moment where Polkadot's parachains are about to come online. Everyone's sort of shifting a lot of focus to DOT. And I wonder, like, what is Kusama now? I know it's been sort of the test ground, but when Polkadot starts to do this, do you think the sort of spirit of the Kusama parachains could change? Do you think people will still have the same enthusiasm? Or do you think there's going to be like a period where people are kind of distracted? Mm-hmm. Are you worried about it? Maybe it doesn't matter, but...
I don't think it really matters. I think the community overlaps a lot, right? The two communities overlap a lot. But what Kusama has in particular is that validator operators tend to be much bigger in number. The active set is bigger, so validators are much more diverse, which means that nominations are much more diverse and the discussion is much more active. Mm. Kusama is cheaper, which means that projects can experiment easily and they don't need to be as worried as the cost of experimentation as they would be on Polkadot, for example. And this can lead to other new use cases that on Polkadot might not happen. So, for example, I think a big use case for Kusama would be Web3 social networks, right? So we have different projects experimenting with that, or identity, for example, or experimenting with common wood chains that in on Polkadot we might not see, right? So I think the community will evolve into different use cases, and we will see the differentiation between these two communities in the next year, right? When we have the first chains on Polkadot connected and already 15 or 20 or 25 Kusama chains connected to this particular community.
Very cool. What do you actually see the spirit of the Kusama network being in the future? Like, you sort of mentioned a few use cases that you think could emerge, but like in terms of the community and Kusama as a unique chain, do you ever see it like splitting away in a way from Polkadot?
So the way I see it is both relay chains, Polkadot and Kusama, are part of the same ecosystem. You know, my hope is that eventually in the future they will be bridged. So
okay, not split away then.
Exactly. So
not the rogue incentivized canary network.
I hope not. It depends on governance, of course, but I'm hoping not. And that Kusama parachains will be able to also interact and enjoy the relationship with Polkadot parachains, right? Once the bridge exists. I think in general, the spirit of Kusama, it's very free, right? And it's no promises and it's very chaotic. And it allows us to discuss very, I could say controversial, or I could say very borderline topics that could be dangerous for a community to discuss, right? But this is the nice part about Kusama. Like if you enter to the Kusama Direction channel, you'll see very candid discussions, right? About like why we shouldn't change certain parameters, why we shouldn't make the network cheaper, or why we should, why this runtime doesn't work. What does this palette means for the entire business logic of the network? What does it mean for the stakeholders? How does this work? You know, this discussion are in the center of Kusama development, and consulars take them very much into account when they vote for runtime upgrades or for change of parameters. So I think in general, what Kusama allows us to do is to discuss this in a very safe environment, so to say.
Mm. Kusama has now, in a way, shown how this governance works, how it works kind of on a little bit of a longer scale. But do you think that, like, do you feel like the experiment is satisfied? Do you feel like, yes, you know, there's enough proof that this is a system that can maintain a network for a long period of time? Or do you think there's still like a testing period that we're in? Basically, to understand if some of these like governance systems and like full on-chain governance to this level with this sophistication, if it works.
Mm-hmm. I think we're still on testing grounds. I think we can say that this works. We can say that on-chain governance works, and it's a mm-hmm. valid mechanism or solution to create consensus in the community and avoid the community ruptures, so to say. But there are still a lot of things we need to improve, right? There are still a lot of things that need to be changed on the governance side of things in order to be optimally working. One issue, for example, is asymmetric information. So the community having different type of information, different sources of information, how they get the real or the truth, or how they get the information, right, from where and by whom, and how they vote also, right? Turnouts in general seem to be low for proposals that are not very controversial. And this needs to be changed. We need the community to be educated and informed. We need the community to participate and to join the direction channels and to join the water coolers and the validator lounges to be able to be part of the discussion on what's the direction of Kusama Network. And I think this has to do a lot with off-chain coordination, more than on-chain coordination on the governance side of things, right? But it's something that's really needed for the construction of consensus to work by on-chain governance mechanisms.
So people are like, will often elect representatives to deal with this minutia. And I guess the question here is like, do you think that there needs to be new levels added to Kusama?
Right. So, I mean, yes, you are right. This is the reason why Council was designed, right? So Council mm-hmm. represents passive stakeholders. And so the governance system on Kusama is a combination, right, of representation and direct democracy. I think new discussions and new designs will bring other levels of direct participation to the system. We will see maybe forms of liquid democracy. We will see forms of speediness of execution of a proposal based on the turnout and the participation of stakeholders. So there are different levels and different parameters that will be taken into account when it comes to enactment of proposals. But yeah, initially the design of Kusama was meant to be a combination of representation and direct democracy, of course, always taking into account that the council can barely execute change of parameters or change of the business logic without the acceptance of the community.
Mm-hmm. Do you imagine, though, also like kind of extra levels created for funding? I guess this is like not only the council level, but also like even more granularly. We were actually talking quite a bit about this bounty, curator bounties, like kind of creating a second layer of mechanisms to distribute funding. And I'm wondering if that's still something that you see in the future. Do you want to have like the council maybe decide larger funding that then gets distributed down to smaller, more granular groups? Yeah, what's your thinking around that?
Yeah, so yeah, this is something we should mention also for the audience, that Kusama has a treasury that is distributed on-chain. And the treasury is funded via staking inefficiencies, transaction fees, and slashing events, right? And the council at the moment is the guardian of this treasury. And so there are different ways the council can use in order to spend these funds. In general, the most used one is the spending proposal mechanisms, which basically works as a grant for a team to develop an idea. Then we have TIPS, which is basically recognizing the work of individual people or teams when it comes to add value to the network. And it has to do with tutorial translations, bug fixes and whatnot, right? In general, it's a one-off. And then we have this new type of mechanism, which is what you're talking about. It's called the bounty mechanism. And the bounty mechanism allows the council to delegate the responsibility of spending the treasury, or at least a portion of the treasury, to an expert on what the bounty is related to. And this expert is called a curator. So basically, this curator that is selected by the consul, it doesn't need to be part of the consul. It can be any Kusama address, has the autonomy to decide how to spend, when, and in which amount to spend certain allocation of the treasury for teams that are developing things that add value to the network. So these three are the methods that we have right now, or that the consul has right now to spend the treasury. This might change in the future. Maybe more will be added, as well as the categories for sponsoring and for funding are changing, are continually changing based on the development of the network, right? So at the beginning, we have eight categories. And then given the development of Kusama and parachains getting connected to the network and whatnot, the consul is seeing new funding proposals when it comes to cross-chain applications. So for example, that's a new category, or the education category is a newly added category as well. And so all of this changes continuously, right? And it depends on what the needs of the network are. At the moment, we have three mechanisms. We hope to have more in the future to be able to spend the treasury more efficiently, of course.
Where does this secret society fit into all of this? We talked about that with Will too. And maybe you can just, I mean, we did just hear about it, as like the listeners will have just heard about it, but I'm wondering, if you can just sort of weigh in on that.
So Kappa Sigma Mu is not part of the governance.
Oh my God, you guys have a Kappa Sigma. Did you say Kappa Sigma Mu?
Yeah, that's the name of the society.
I didn't know that.
It is, yeah. Yeah, the society is not part of the governance design. It's just a membership club that was created in order to experiment with on-chain decisions.
And
right?
Tattoos.
It does. Mm-hmm. And tattoos, yeah, because of course you need to have a tattoo to get in. It does have a treasury, its own treasury, right? And it is funded by the treasury automatically. Mm-hmm. I think it's like 1% each period, or 1% of the potential burn of the treasury each period goes to the treasury of the society. Mm-hmm. And from there is where new members are rewarded for bidding to enter the society, mm-hmm. and successfully submitting proof of ink or the two. But the society is not related to the governance society. It doesn't make decisions inside or within the governance design. It's just a membership club for Kusama aficionados, so
like
to say.
Hardcore
for part of the
people.
Community. Hardcore Kusama aficionados, yeah.
Are you in that by chance?
I am, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah, I am.
Do you see actually some funding coming out of that though? Like, that's a relatively large percentage, 1% of treasury burn, like that seems high. So does it now have like a massive treasury it also has to find a way to distribute?
I mean, it has some funds for sure that can be distributed. At the moment, the only way the pilot allows us to spend the funds is by members bidding, mm-hmm. and getting their reward for a successful bid, right? Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of discussion among the members about changing this logic and allowing the existing members to decide, kind of like the consul, right? To decide how to spend these funds. And like, if some members have ideas about proposals or about things that could add value to the network, maybe also fund these members via the society treasury. So these discussions are ongoing in the channel, which is also public. The society channel is also public, and that's where you can see also the submissions of the POIs and the challenges to existing members and new candidates getting information and so on.
Mm-hmm. Crazy. Is there any last thoughts you want to share?
I think if you're interested in the direction of Polkadot, it's always important to see the Canary Network first. So if you're interested in the direction of Polkadot, pay attention to Kusama Network as well. Kusama Network is a much more flexible and faster network, and it allows us to experiment with the code that the teams are creating. Join the channels, pay attention to the discussions, talk to your consulars, and vote.
Very cool. Okay, Raul, thanks so much for coming on the show and sharing with us the insights into Kusama governance, a little bit about the society, and where you could see it going.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
So I want to welcome Bruno Schwartz, founder of Remark, to the show. Welcome, Bruno.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
In this part of the episode, Bruno and I are going to be talking a little bit about the Remark project, an NFT project on Kusama. And then we're going to also talk about Kusama. So it's a bit of a shift from what we just talked about. Remark is a Kusama first project. So Bruno, maybe you can introduce yourself and share with us what the Remark project is all about.
Sure. I started out with Ethereum in 2015 when I data mined my happiness and figured that JavaScript was making me miserable. So I dropped all of my web contracts and just transitioned cold turkey. I spent the next year just learning. Then I started educating, built some educational websites, a magazine where I taught Web2 developers how to transition to Web3. A few hundred posts and a book later, I got hired by Status to work on Ethereum 2.0. And I was their technical writer. And then after a year or so of that, I got poached by the Web3 Foundation to work on Polkadot and Kusama, also as a technical educator, actually.
Nice.
And the Remark came about when I noticed that the NFT craze was ramping up again in August of last year. I had been pretty deeply into Kusama by then, and I liked the chain very much and the little cult that grew around it that had this little artsy bend. So I figured it would be a real shame if Kusama missed out on the NFT wave that was coming. And I recognized it because I was a big part of the first one on Ethereum when things broke due to CryptoKitties. But, you know, Kusama being Kusama, no smart contracts and stuff, so needed to get creative with hacking NFTs onto it.
Yeah.
Turned out really great, but it was really Russian roulette, so it could have gone very, very wrong.
Tell me a little bit about Remark then. What is Remark? How do you get NFTs on Kusama?
When I first came up with the concept, it just recycled the idea from Bitcoin's early days with colored coins, where you just basically store custom messages alongside transactions and interpret them in a special way, and then you kind of get extra data from it. But obviously, that never went anywhere on Bitcoin because nobody wants to wait for 2 hours for their NFT transfer to confirm. But the idea is good, especially on Kusama, because when you issue these transactions, and there's like every substrate chain like Kusama has this remark utility, which is where the protocol got its name. And if you issue a remark on the chain, that's basically like you graffitiing the chain. You don't make a state change. It doesn't get stored in the database of the chain itself, but it gets stored alongside the blocks. And so it does get stored on the hard drive of the nodes that are running, but not on the chain itself. So it doesn't bloat the state. And if you compare it to something like blocks in a blockchain being a shipping container that contains transactions and transfers them, what we did was we graffitied the outside of that container. So that value is still there. Only we built a special language on how to interpret and read these graffiti to actually get NFTs out of this. And so this is how it started.
So let's explore what Remark, you just said Remark is like it's a code, it's a call in Kusama. Where does that actually live? And is that like the equivalent of like memo field?
Yeah, it is exactly like the memo field, only in most chains. Actually, yeah, it's exactly like the memo field. It lives alongside the block. The Remark is an extrinsic. The function is an extrinsic, which means it's an external input into the chain. And usually extrinsics have some sort of effect, like they will make a state change where an account balance will change, or you will write a new value to the blockchain's database, like I am now nominating this guy, or I have just voted for this referendum. So those are state changes. But remarks are stateless extrinsics, meaning that they're just basically, you know, you shouting into the ether and them not having any effect. So they don't actually change the chain, but all the full nodes of Kusama and any substrate chain actually do save these alongside all of the blocks on their hard drive.
The follow-up question I have to that then is, so what you're doing is you're trying to create an NFT-like experience, but there is no smart contracts. So NFTs, as they're known to most people, what is it, ERC 721s or whatever the new ERC that's being used to like design an NFT, that's all reliant on smart contract enablement. Like you have to be able to deploy a contract in order to mint an NFT. You don't have contracts. You're using this Remark utility. You're using the memo field or Remark field, I guess. So Like, what do you put in there? How is it that you could still have an NFT that's transferable if you've just written something into a memo field?
Yeah. So we use the remark field, the remark as an event in an event sourcing database. And so you essentially, what you essentially get is every single change to the system is a new write into a remark. So you will issue in block one, you will issue a remark like mint this picture of an apple as an NFT. Mm-hmm. And then in block two, you will issue a remark saying send this picture of an apple from Alice to Bob. And then if in block three, you say send this picture of an apple from Alice to Charlie, that remark is now going to be invalid when processed by our tools that are looking at all of these remarks, because in block two, it was already sent to Bob. And so this is the first problem of the remark system as it is, in that in order to sync it, in order to be able to know the up-to-date state of the NFTs in the ecosystem, you have to basically sync from scratch and consolidate all of these events, squash them into one final state that is calculated from the very beginning. Now, we do maintain regular automatically updated dumps on IPFS of all of this, so people can just fetch the latest valid state of the entire remark ecosystem. But this is obviously very inefficient, and this is why we are currently rewriting the logic to actually move away from remarks and get into palette territory and smart contract territory as well.
Okay, yeah, because the way you describe it there, you have almost an external system that's looking at these memo fields, and you'd almost have to compile. Like, you're basically watching states change in this separate thing. And so what you're saying now, though, is you're thinking of moving it onto a palette. Are you probably going to make a parachain then? Is this like going to be its own network?
No. So it is exactly like that. So we run a consolidator service, which is also a standalone script that anybody else can run, which then fetches all of these remarks and squashes them into this final state that is valid.
Okay.
Now, during our fundraise phase, we had buy-in from all of the heavy hitters in the Kusama ecosystem, all of these parachains, where they basically committed to adding our palettes to their runtime when they are available. Ah. So moving to palettes has always been the plan, only because there was no parachain technology when we were starting Remark, we had to improvise. So they have actually committed to adding our palettes to their runtimes. And this in turn means that when the Remark palettes are on all of these chains that have committed to this, we kind of made the first unofficial system-wide spree in Polkadot, because all of these chains will share our runtime and you'll be able to seamlessly teleport your non-fungibles from one chain to the other.
Mm-hmm.
So this has always been the plan. And we're also moving to smart contracts because fundamentally it is incredibly easy to write this functionality that we have in Solidity. So we are there's also an ongoing effort to rewrite it at Solidity and deploy it on Moonriver and Shiden. Though Remark has significantly evolved since its, you know, NFTs and image days in the in August of last year. We went from a hack on Kusama to support basic NFTs to the most advanced NFT system in the world. And I say this like with full objectivity and awareness
sure.
of how cocky it is. But I can promise you that in like 3 to 5 years, every single NFT in the world will be based on Remark or a copy of Remark, purely because nothing else will make sense. Remark is to NFTs what Ethereum was to blockchains when it came out.
Whoa, these are huge claims, but I want to take a really quick step back because you used two terms that our audience may not be familiar with. You mentioned a palette, palette being kind of like a module in Substrate. Is that fair?
Yeah. Palette is a plugin for Substrate chains, which allows you to add in custom functionality.
Cool. And we did talk about Substrate in an earlier part of this interview, so people should be familiar with it. You also mentioned Spree.
Mm-hmm.
I have defined that on previous episodes with Polkadot people, but maybe you should explain what Spree actually is.
Yeah. So Spree is, or short for like Substrate protected runtime execution environment or something like that. That's basically like when you have like a programming language, you have some libraries that you can reuse across your projects to get some functionality that you already used before somewhere else or that somebody else wrote. And Spree is very much like that. Spree is like a common core library for parachains to subscribe to. Mm-hmm. So Spree is like a system that parachains can declare that they're supporting. And for example, you can imagine a balances Spree where two chains declare that they support the balances spree, and now they understand each other. The problem that spree is solving is when you have two parachains that are not developed by the same team and that may not even know each other, these chains can send each other a message through the cross-chain messaging protocol on Polkadot, but that message doesn't have to be interpreted properly by the other chain, because the other chain, like if chain A says to chain B, send user Bob 100 tokens, the other chain might not know what user is, what Bob is, and what tokens are, and what 100 is even. By having spree in a central place, like a relay chain, it's kind of like a library in between, like an interpreter that both chains can declare, all right, for any balance changes, I'm going to listen to what this spree guy tells me it means. And by doing this, the chains can intuitively understand each other, and the execution of the message that is sent is guaranteed, because there's no way that it gets misinterpreted.
Is it sort of a standard, almost? Like a standards channel?
Kind of, yeah, kind of like that. Only it's a full implementation with its own database on the relay chain, or probably going to be a spree parachain, or I don't know what the plan is there, because spree isn't really under development yet. And this is why I say we're the first like unofficial spree, in that if all these chains implement our palettes, then there's no need for a central spree of remark. And this means that they can actually talk directly between the palettes that they implemented, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. Crazy. Okay. Like I need to dig into your claim that it's the most advanced NFT. Like, so you have the NFT palettes on all these different chains. You've created sort of your own version of a spree, like non-official. How, like, is it that infrastructure that makes them so advanced?
Oh, no, not that. It's purely in what it makes possible for NFTs, in that it allows them to move away from expensive images. Right now, all you have is basically expensive image NFTs. And this is because on Ethereum, where basically all the NFTs are, you have two standards, ERC-721 and ERC-1155. Mm-hmm. And these support the lowest common denominator, which is just a reference to an image somewhere. And this is for good reason, because when you're a general purpose computer, abstracting away all of that functionality is really hard. And all of these marketplaces and incumbents that are already on Ethereum have a huge problem implementing new things. And so they like to play it safe. And the ERC-721 makes them a lot of money right now.
Yeah.
So it's economically rational to reject change there. So this is problem number one. Problem number two is that on Ethereum, when you're doing any kind of standard development, like on ERC-721 or even ERC-20 for fungible tokens, what you're doing is you're basically just writing a spreadsheet. And that spreadsheet has many rows with many columns of data. Only NFT spreadsheets just have more columns. So whereas an ERC-20 spreadsheet will have just an address and the balance, an ERC-721 spreadsheet will have an address and the balance, and then also an attribute of that NFT and another attribute and so on. Fundamentally, this is inefficient because all of these spreadsheets are abstracted away to the most common data structures, which means that you're always storing strings and numbers. And storing a lot of strings in these data structures on a public blockchain with high demand is incredibly expensive, and this is why transferring a simple NFT costs $100 to $200 on a good day on Ethereum. This can never be efficient. Now, what we've built on Remark, with Remark 2.0 especially, which is live now, we have five fundamental NFT Legos, where when you put them together, you can compose a system of arbitrary complexity without smart contracts, but also any UI and any app that supports these fundamental primitive Legos automatically supports any derivation of them, any permutation of them, anything that you can put together from them. And this is what gives the system its power, because in Ethereum, if you want to build an NFT project that has any custom functionality, anything more creative than just an image, your community is beholden to your UI. Mm-hmm. They have to rely on you to build that custom UI for them. If you disappear, that functionality mainly disappears. Nobody's going to be interacting directly with the contract to play with your things. And if you get an actually advanced NFT project out on Ethereum, it is going to look extremely plain on marketplaces like Rarible, like OpenSea, and so on, because mm-hmm. by definition, when you customize your NFT, you've written a custom smart contract, and these marketplaces have zero incentive to add UI support for your custom contract. But if you have fundamental Legos that you can very easily support technically in the UI way, then you also support any derivation of them. And because you can build really rich projects from these Legos, any UI that supports them will also support them automatically. Now, you can always smarten that up even more with more custom contracts around this. But in the vast majority of cases, we've abstracted these Legos enough to support most of what people want to build. And so these Legos are NFTs being able to own other NFTs, NFTs being able to equip other NFTs and change their appearance, NFTs being able to receive on-chain emotes, so reactions from people, which is pretty cool in terms of price discovery and social mechanics.
Yeah.
NFTs being able to have multiple resources so that you can have different outputs depending on different contexts. So like I can mint a video game NFT that contains code, a PDF manual, and a high-resolution cover image. And if you load it into a game-compatible marketplace for NFTs, you will just have it autoplay, run. But if you load it into a primitive environment, like something like OpenSea, you will just see the image, right? And if you load it into something like our marketplace, Singular, it will open the PDF because we have a PDF reader built in, so you can read ebook NFTs there as well. And so one more Lego is conditional rendering, where you can have little bits of logic called JSON logic in the NFTs that will trigger based on some on-chain and off-chain information.
Some change, basically.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if I have like something like a mountain that's surrounded by flowers and birds and everything, I can say, provided that this NFT has an alternative resource that's a snowy mountain, I can say to the NFT, if this NFT gets 50 snow emojis, switch the display to the snowy mountain. And now if you make that equipable into another NFT so that it's a background, for example, then you now have an evolving composable image that can react to emotes that people send it.
Wow.
And the fifth Lego is fractionalization of NFTs.
I've done a show on fractionalization with Andy Chorlian. We can actually link to that if people want to find out about that idea. Cool.
So the fractionalization is a really cool concept, but it's used in Ethereum precisely because of the limits in functionality and because of the gas fees only to gamble. So all you can do is speculate with these fungible tokens. Whereas in Remark, you can use them to democratically govern, well, plutocratically govern an NFT. So that if you need to collectively decide that an in-game avatar needs to equip a piece of equipment, you can distribute that avatar's fungible tokens to the community and they will vote for it. And now we have like collaborative gaming sessions on Twitch where the audience is live modifying the loadout of a character that the gamer is getting into battle with or stuff
wild.
Like that.
I mean, this is a wild project. Thank you so much for sharing kind of this insight into it. I do want to link us back to the topic of this overall episode, and that is Kusama. Mm-hmm. You've decided to put Remark, I mean, it started on the Kusama network, I guess you said like August 2020 was when you were starting it?
Yes, yeah.
So Kusama Parachains came live in April. Now, you know, we're getting close to Polkadot Parachains coming live. You're primarily a Kusama project, but are you thinking of moving to Polkadot? Is there a reason you're on Kusama?
The reason is that this was a wild enough hack to deploy on a wild enough network. Kusama seemed friendly to it, and I didn't feel like it matches the context of Polkadot to put this basically vandalization of blocks onto Polkadot. It always felt more at home on Kusama, which is much more artsy, much more open to things, and which I'm personally a bigger fan of. However, by the time Polkadot is ready for parachain deployments, we will also be deployed on some chains with our pallets. So by extension, we will not be necessary in the Remark format on Polkadot. And so we will be implicitly available through our partner parachains. We will not launch our own parachain, but we do not intend to have a separate deployment on Polkadot per se, especially with the announced bridge between Kusama and Polkadot. I don't think that's necessary.
Got it. So you are a Kusama first project then?
Yes.
You just described this Kusama ecosystem that it's more creative, that you were doing basically graffiti on the side of the chain, which I love that image. But yeah, tell me a little bit more about Kusama as it stands and maybe how you see it developing now that Polkadot is live or going to soon be live in its fullest form.
I don't actually think we've seen as much testing on Kusama as everybody wanted to see. And so I don't really consider it the canary network for Polkadot. Haven't considered it for a while. I've always considered it its own mainnet that is growing its own audience and its own projects. And I think it stands really well standalone on its own. And I think it can evolve in that direction really, really well. There are certain problems that need to be resolved, like decentralizing the council some more and just generally fixing some issues with governance in particular. But I think Kusama is on a really good path to be an incredible powerhouse, especially for this experimental nature of projects that might be seen as weird. Like, I've always compared Polkadot and Kusama to, like, Kusama is your garage band concert where your friends come and you have a few cases of beer and everybody's having fun and somebody spills some beer on a speaker and it doesn't matter because the other one's still working. Mm-hmm. And you shout songs at the band that you want them to play and nobody cares and everybody's happy and everybody has fun. Things break, people fight, but at the end of the day, this is the story that we tell our children and friends. Whereas Polkadot is like a symphony that is rehearsed, that requires, you know, like people with bow ties and pinkies out to calmly sit in the first row. Mm-hmm. And when you need to make a change in the symphony, you have to have buy-in from the conductor, the audience, the orchestra, the singers, everybody who's involved has to agree to it. And it'll take a while to make a change. So in a way, Kusama started out as kind of this practicing ground where you kind of practice your instruments for the symphony. But in effect, it turned into what actually happens, and that's that the punky garage band stays a punky garage band, and the symphony guys are just schooled elsewhere. I really like this independence of Kusama, and I think it can go a long way if it decouples even further.
Amazing. I really love the image you just presented. Yeah, do you have any last sort of thoughts? This is the last interview of the Kusama episode, so maybe if you want to send any encouragement to folks who are listening to this, it might be the first time they're actually aware of this network or have seen some insight into how it's running.
I would say that no matter if you're technical or non-technical, if you have any ambition in launching anything, just ship. Don't plan, don't think. I used to be of the persuasion that a lot of thought needs to be put into things. Like I would spend 4 weeks on a domain name and then four more on a basic design. And then I would log on to Twitter and see that three different people have done the project during my deliberations. He who ships wins. So ship and win, you know, tune in and do something, mint an NFT on Singular, build a project that hacks the chain, or, you know, deploy a new prediction market on a Zeitgeist beta version. Go in, explore, click around. There's literally nothing to lose if you're this early. So yeah, be brave and explore this crazy ecosystem.
That's very cool. And also you have very much this NFT ethos. I've been hearing this from other folks in the NFT space of just like shipping so fast. You just have to do something quickly. You can't sit there and plan the same way you maybe even did in Web3, especially not the way you would have done in Web2. Wild. Yeah. Cool. Well, thanks for sharing your journey, Bruno. And thanks for coming on the show.
Sure. My pleasure.
And I want to say a big thank you to the podcast producer, Tanya, the podcast editor, Henrik, and to our listeners. Thanks for listening. Mm-hmm.